the show that helps you find ways to take back control in issues regarding your mental and your physical well-being. I'm Roberta Fernandez, a board-certified hypnotist, an NLP master practitioner, and a certified hypnosis instructor. I'm located at the Fair Hypnosis Center in Eden Prairie. And I use hypnosis to help people succeed where nothing else has worked. And I'm so glad to be here with you every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock on AM 950. Today, we are talking about fears. Now, last week, we talked about fear in general. But this time, we're going to hone in on something specific. And this is fears and attitudes around money. And money is a sticky topic for a lot of people. And I have a really special guest here this morning. I'd like to welcome Mary Schmidt. Welcome, Mary.
Hello. Good morning, everyone.
Mary is an award-winning master coach, a professional speaker, and CEO of a company called Your Brilliant You. She provides business professionals simple and practical ways to get beyond their personal blind spots so they can make decisions with greater self-value and confidence. And she teaches her clients how to effectively address people's underlying emotions, values, and beliefs so that they can improve their conversations and their relationships. And previously, Mary spent about 30 years as a healthcare executive. So Mary and I, even though she does something very different than I do, our area of focus can sometimes be very similar.
Right.
Yeah. So Mary, let's just dive right in here. Most people would rather not talk about money. Why is that?
That's correct. That's correct. When was the last time you had a conversation about money? And I mean a serious conversation about what you were thinking and what you were feeling, not just the checkbook balance sheet or the ledger sheet, but a serious conversation of what money meant to you.
It's been a while.
Yeah. And so you are like most people who simply would rather hide their head in the sand than have a conversation about money.
It's true. And I think money, more than a lot of the other issues that I bring people in, I mean, we know in relationships, money and sex are the two biggies, right?
Correct. Correct.
We just have such a hard time being able to communicate what our needs and our desires are around that.
That's correct.
And I find in my business that a lot of that comes from our upbringing somewhere along
right,
the line.
Right. You know, Roberta, the American Psychological Association every year does a research study about what stresses Americans out the most.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been conducting this survey since 2007. And every year, what do you think is the number one topic that comes up about the general population and what stresses you the most?
It's money.
It's money. 73% of the time, 73% of the people surveyed consistently over the last many years said money stresses them the most.
That's so fascinating. And we do see that. I mean, we look at our current political and economic environment. I mean, it because money affects everything that we do. No matter how we try to avoid it, we can't. You know, we have bills to pay. We have to bring money in. And when it's not to our liking, it's really hard for us to talk about it because I think we don't have control over it.
We think we don't have control.
We think, right.
Yeah, we think we don't have control over it. So what happens instead is we just hide our head in the sand until that money alarm, ding, 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 goes off.
That's right.
And it's like the New Year's resolution, like something has happened.
That's right.
And we say we no longer can just hide out. I've got to do something. So what do? We get into what I call the crazy money cycle. And we run to the internet and find out, what should I do? What should I do? Or we run to the bookstore and look through the stacks and stacks of books on personal finance. Yeah. Bring it home and simply say, there, this is it. I got it. Here it is, page 3, paragraph 2. These are the 5 things I need to do. And we set out into motion. We are going to conquer this. And so we start getting into action and doing all these things like, we're not going to have that latte. I'll make a budget.
I will.
I'll make a budget and I'll really stick to it this time. I won't do that extra shopping trip. I promise I'll put some money away and save it. And it goes well for a day.
It's
5
like
days,
weight loss, yes.
Maybe a week or a month. But it's just like our New Year's resolution. We
That's
get
right.
into the action trying to do something differently without really understanding what's going on.
Right.
And
right.
so, like the New Year's resolution, it goes away. We give up. We sink our head back into the sand and simply say, I'm just not that good with money. No. And then we take it on as that we failed. When I give a workshop called Why New Year's Resolutions Don't Work, because we don't get to the root of the problem to begin with.
Correct.
We don't, we deal with the superficial things, the things that we feel are easy fixes.
Right.
But you're right, we never have that conversation or that internal look inside that lets us see, where is this coming from? Why do I keep repeating the same thing over and over and over again?
Right.
Yeah. And Einstein said the definition of insanity is, you know, doing that and expecting different results, because it just doesn't happen. So what really drives people, Mary, and their money behaviors?
Research indicates that by the time we were seven, Cambridge, big study done by Cambridge University, before the time we were seven, we were imprinted and put into our subconscious all these messages about money. Mm-hmm. We heard things from our parents, perhaps around the kitchen table. We heard things from our religious leaders, mm-hmm. maybe in Sunday school or kindergarten. We maybe saw people who used to live next door to us all of a sudden not afford their house and no longer be there. So we take the messages that we have and we store them in our subconscious. Sort of like when you're young and impressionable before the age of seven, did you believe in the Easter Bunny?
Oh, yes.
How about Santa Claus?
Absolutely.
And even the tooth fairy.
That's right.
So we put these beliefs in our subconscious, and they stay there, and they go unchallenged. Not like the myths we have about Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny or the tooth fairy. As we become older and our brain develops, we now can put two and two together and figure out that this was not true.
Right. And you know, Mary, I have talked a lot on this show about how our brains develop, and we don't have that logical mind. It doesn't start to form until we're around seven.
Correct.
So what you're saying totally fits in with that timeline. And as a child, all we have is our subconscious mind, and it's very literal. And because we're little and we have no life context for the things that we hear or we experience, it's hard for us to sort through all that. We don't have that logical mind to say, you know what, Santa really isn't going to make it to every house in the whole world in one
night.
Right. You know, we just take it in as the truth.
We absorb it like a sponge.
That's
is what I say.
Exactly.
So as this
right.
beautiful child, we just take in whatever people are telling us, the things that we hear, the things that we see, the things we watch on TV.
Right.
From
right.
every source, we just soak it up.
And you know, it's funny because when I met you, I'll just tell the audience, I went to hear Mary speak, and I had seen an ad for your talk, and it was about money. And at the time, I had two very different clients that were in my office with interesting beliefs around money.
Mm-hmm.
One of them had a ton of money, and she couldn't spend it.
Yeah.
She was just afraid. I mean, I don't think she could have spent all her money in a lifetime, but she could not spend 10 cents. It really bothered her. And the other one had no money and couldn't stop spending.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were all around these beliefs and experiences that they had as a child. And we had to go in there and say, look, this isn't serving you. What do you want to do about it, right?
Yeah.
And I came to you to say, this is interesting. This woman is talking about these things, and I wanted to hear what you had to say. And I was hooked because you have some really interesting things about that.
Yeah, one of the things that we look at, Roberta, is the patterning that mm-hmm. we've developed around money. The first key to working with people around money is there's no judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Many times we judge ourselves or think others are judging us or are very self-critical because we think we have the belief we're just not that good with money.
Right.
And so the first piece is to look at it through eyes that are not judgmental and simply say, I have some patterning around money that either works for me or doesn't work for me.
Right, right. And the importance of that, I think, and this is why I wanted you on the show, is because when... You know, our brain is always, it's hardwired to protect us.
Correct.
And we always go to the negative. So because money is so big a part of our culture and our economic system and our day-to-day living, we automatically activate that amygdala where we go right to fear. If I don't have enough, or if I can't do this, or I can't buy my kid that $150 pair of tennis shoes,
yeah.
you know, this horrible thing is going to happen.
Right.
And it is that fear
that really drives us.
That's right. It's the fear that we have. And those fears then have come, worked together to create a belief system mm-hmm. that may or may not be true.
That's right. And then we, then our logical mind comes in and tries to rationalize it.
Sure. Because what happens is when we get triggered by the amygdala, we get flooded with cortisol, and our brain acts like a 7-year-old.
It does.
And it goes back to the things that we remembered rather than being able to be open to take a look at each situation and problem solve around that. We get so triggered that all we can think about are the thoughts and the ideas of what we had learned in the past.
Right.
So what happens then is we make our decisions from the past rather than based on what is today and what can I do differently.
Right. And what happens when that fear, from my perspective, when it goes really deep, when we start to develop that logical mind, our brain creates protective mechanisms that doesn't allow us to access all those old memories and those old ideas and beliefs. And so a lot of times as an adult, we function and we have triggers that we can't identify
Correct.
Where it's even coming from.
Correct.
And this just creates all kinds of very interesting issues around it. We got to go to a commercial break here, but I want our listening audience to know Mary has some amazing information to share. So when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Mary Schmidt from our My Brilliant You about fears and attitudes around money and what we can do to change those core beliefs and really how to recognize what our current beliefs are about
Correct.
Money and why we function the way we function.
Right on.
So we'll be back in a moment after this commercial break. With Mary Schmidt about fears and attitudes. And Mary is the owner of Your Brilliant You. And we're going to dive in, Mary, because this was one of the things I heard you talk about when I came to see you that just fascinated me. And that is money archetypes. So let's dive in and tell me, what does that mean?
Archetypes comes from Carl Jung's theory about how we see the world mm-hmm. is in set patterns. And even though your experiences may have been different than mine, how we see the world can be defined in categories mm-hmm. that we call archetypes. And archetypes are just kind of a holding place that begin to help us to describe how we see the world.
Right.
And so the money archetypes are looking at the patterns of things that may be true in terms of our attitudes, beliefs, and values about money that impact how we see the world.
Okay.
And so we identify these archetypes and begin to figure out what might be true.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about the archetypes. And what I want you to notice is I'm going to give you just a brief description.
Okay.
And just notice what may be true for you.
Perfect.
It's not diagnostic. It's not telling you who you are or what you are. But you're going to notice themes and patterns that create the complex person that you are.
Okay. Awesome. I found this to be fascinating because when I took your little quiz, it was like, wow, she gets me. She knows me.
Yeah. Many people will say, well, I'm just a saver or I'm just a spender or I'm not that good with money. And I don't ascribe to that
right.
because we're much more complex than that. And
Absolutely.
We will have different, many times conflicting thoughts and ideas about money. And when we have these conflicting thoughts and ideas, that's where we get stopped.
Right.
So the first archetype is what we call the ruler. The ruler values herself on hard work, ambition, and drive.
Mm-hmm.
There are rules to the way the world operates. There's rules to how she sees things. And the one rule that the ruler has, and when we look inside, sort of pull the curtain aside and say, so what makes you tick and what motivates you and what do you think about money in terms of your relationship with it? The ruler will say, well, I measure my self-worth by what's in my bank account.
Right.
There's always more to do for the ruler. So being able to enjoy the successes that she's had, like a project's been completed and it's been successful. No time for that.
No, there's never enough, right?
We're never enough.
Yeah.
We're on to the next thing. We drive ourselves relentlessly. And if we're in the position of having a team, we drive them relentlessly too, because there's always enough. The core belief is there's not enough and I'm not enough.
Right.
So we work harder, faster, not necessarily smarter, and we're busy all the time.
Yes.
So the place for the ruler to look is really, how do you slow down a bit and really acknowledge the work that you've done?
Yeah, acknowledge and celebrate those things, right?
The accomplishments and celebrate them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, take a little time to stop and reflect of all the good things that you do. The second archetype, as I fondly call it, is the accumulator. And we call the accumulator the inner banker.
Always looking where that next interest is coming from, right?
Yes, because the ruler and saving money are a match made in heaven. The ruler values themselves on how much they can save and being responsible with money. Now, that's not a bad thing.
Now, you mean the accumulator.
The accumulator. I'm sorry.
The accumulator
values himself on money and saving money. It's just, that's what they're up to.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing. Remember, we're not judging it, but that's kind of how they think and see the world, because enough is never enough for them in terms of how much they've saved.
Right.
So as soon as they get it, they lock it away and save it. So spending money for them is really a difficult thing, even on simple things like getting a car wash.
Right.
I have a client who simply said, well, every Saturday morning I do two things. I mow the lawn and I get a car wash. Nothing happens before I do that. Well, I said, have you ever thought of perhaps hiring that out? Oh, no, no, no. That's too expensive.
Right.
So even things that you and I perhaps would spend money on causes them great angst. But when we pull the curtain aside and say what's going on the inside, some of the beliefs that drive them is that they never want to be dependent on other people.
Right.
So they want to be self-sustaining. Safety and security is their mantra, and that's what's the most important to them. Where they can get tripped up in business or in life is that they miss out on opportunities.
Right.
I see the accumulator like being in this box, and every now and then they'll open the lid of the box, peek out and say, well, there is so much more there, put the lid on the box again, and simply say, that's not for me, it's too risky.
Right.
So safety and security are their drivers, and risk is not an easy thing that they do.
Yes.
It just isn't in their personality and their makeup. The third archetype is the maverick. I imagine the maverick to be, we call this the inner rebellious person. The maverick is like this pony in the wild desert, mane flying, tail flying. They're just having a good time doing what they like to do. They're leading the pack. They're willing to take risks for big rewards, but don't ever back them into a corner because they'll come out fighting.
Mm-hmm.
The maverick just does not like to be told what to do. And sometimes they miss the simple and true things that we need to do by simply saying it's too mundane, it's too boring, so they go off and create something big and new again. They love to create. They love to be the leader of the pack. They love big risk, big reward. It's going to pay off. They just know it's going to pay off. They buy an orange for a nickel, and they simply say, I just know I can sell it for a dime. Maybe they can, maybe they can't. But this whole sort of adrenaline rush that they get with looking at risk may lead them to making decisions that are not in their best interest. But they love that excitement of making a deal.
I fall into that category, as you all know.
Get out of my way. Let me do my thing. And seeking advice and using advice that's common and practical is not always their strength. So that's the place that they want to take a look and say, is there some place for me to grow here?
Right.
We have the alchemist is another archetype. The alchemist is like this hot air balloon floating over the world and looking down and simply saying, oh my gosh, there's a problem here and there and here and there. And I could do so much good in this world if it just weren't for the money.
I know.
They really are a visionary, a
yes.
big picture, a visionary. And it's true that they do see many things that are many possibilities. But they have this love-hate relationship with money. If it weren't for the money, I could do so much good. And they spend lots of time worrying simply on how to pay the bills. So what they tend to do also is to hop from idea to idea to idea. So what they really need, I say, is a string and a rock to hold them down, to take their idea, fully implement it, and monetize it and see what they get.
Right. Because they don't give it enough time to come to fruition.
Exactly. So they're always on to the next thing because they have a new idea.
Right. And they're panicked because the old one hasn't worked fast enough and produced the money they need to live.
Correct. And so when that panic, then that's where some of the beliefs come about, you know, if it weren't for the money is not a good thing. The money is evil. If it weren't for the money, there would be so much good that I could do in the world or so much good that could be done in the world if it weren't for that money.
Right. So their intentions are good, but they kind of shoot themselves in the foot because they get hung up on the money.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So we have to go to a break here in a few seconds, but we're talking about archetypes. Mary, how many are there total?
There's a total of 8 archetypes.
There's a total of 8. So we're about halfway
through.
If you haven't heard your archetype yet or you're thinking, nah, that's not really me, or maybe you've listened to these and said, well, I think I'm a little bit of all of those. When we get back, Mary's going to explain how that could possibly work. So for those of you that might have just joined us, we're talking with Mary Schmidt about fears and attitudes around money, and she's in the middle of explaining these amazing money archetypes. We'll be back in just a few moments. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Roberta Fernandez, and you're listening to Minding Your Health here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We're talking with Mary Schmidt about money archetypes. So, Mary, let's go ahead and continue. Who's next on our list?
The next character, I call them my cast of characters, that up is the celebrity.
Oh, boy.
So let's open the curtains and see who the celebrity is. As the name indicates, and you might well have guessed, the celebrity values themselves on the impression that they make. They're a center of attention, and when they walk in the room, they like literally take the air out of the room. They're charismatic, they're charming, they're personable, they know all the A players in town, they know everything, they just make a wow impression. But when we pull the curtain behind and say what's going on with the celebrity, there's a thoughtfulness about them that they just don't want to be vulnerable and open up to other people and let them know who they really are because they fear that they will be judged, criticized, or not liked. So they keep the persona up of the celebrity kind of status to protect themselves from other people's looking at them and simply saying, who are you really? The funny thing about the celebrity is once they begin to share some of their vulnerabilities, they find themselves even more endeared to the people that they're with. But there's that hesitancy to go there based out of fear again.
Yeah. And those might be the people who like to spend money and flash money.
They love to spend money, overspend, give to charity, drive the best car, have fancy clothes. And you may say, well, I kind of think I'm a celebrity, but I don't do that things. So you don't necessarily even always have to have the external trappings, although that is kind of a sign. Sometimes it's things like giving to charity and standing out in a crowd and being noticed.
Right.
That's really important to them.
Yeah, yeah. So your worth is built around that image.
And the image is really not who you are, so therefore people many times feel like the fraud factor.
Yes, I get that a lot in my office.
Yeah, so if you really knew who I was...
You wouldn't like me.
You wouldn't like me.
You would think I was terrible or...
You wouldn't think that I'm as good as I say that I am.
Yep. Yeah, and a lot of these are very successful people, but they have not allowed themselves to really internalize that success and say, well, I was just in the right place at the right time, or I'm just lucky.
Right.
They don't feel like they've contributed to that success in a significant way.
And so when they have success and money comes in, I will guarantee it's gone the next day.
Yeah.
Because it's all built around the external validation and external trappings, because that guards their it guards their self-image.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Who's next on that list?
The nurturer. Oh, my gosh. The nurturer. The nurturer is your best friend forever, whether you want her to be or not.
Yep.
The nurturer values herself on the service that she gives and the quality that she provides. She just is the best friend forever, and she loves to be around people, and she loves when she's around people to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. And therein lies the problem. She likes to take care of people, listen to what their stories are, give them a solution, and expect that things go well. So she ends up giving away a lot of her time and money. And with these shaky boundaries that she has, many times he or she will end up feeling like, I've given so much away, and what did I get?
Right.
they get what I call kind of snarky at the end of the day because they've given and given of themselves to other people. But when it comes to taking care of themselves, they're way at the bottom of the list.
Right. And that energy flow of give and take is essential for all of us.
Yes.
Because we have to replenish ourselves, right, whether it be financially or emotionally or whatever. That's really, really important.
Exactly. And that's one of the places for the nurture to look and say, you know, in any situation when help is asked for, am I the first one to raise my hand? Probably. Mm-hmm. And do I have more things on my plate than I can possibly do in a day? Probably.
Absolutely.
And so those are some little hints and places to look to simply say, am I giving away more than what I'm allowing to come in?
Right, right.
Then the next character in our lineup of the money archetypes is the romantic. Oh, the romantic loves life, loves to live life, loves to have the good things and just enjoy life. Right, the idea about money is, you know, you can't take it with you, so you might as well spend it here. And they do. They spend it on things for themselves. They spoil other people. They just love spending money. I say, it's a good day, they spend money. It's a bad day, they spend money. Any day that you
can. It all makes them feel good.
It all makes them feel good. And there is the secret about the romantic is that they do use money in terms of buying things for themselves or other people or luxurious item because it makes them feel good temporarily.
Yes.
But when they wake up the next day and open up the credit card bill, they don't feel the same joy. But it fills a void for not feeling special or not feeling cared for. So they go out and fill the void with buying things.
Yes, yes. And you know, it's interesting as I listen to you talk in hypnosis, we commonly talk about money, problems with money, whether it's gambling or shopping too much or whatever, working too much, these too much behaviors. It's a distractor for avoiding what the real emotion is,
exactly,
what the real problem is underneath.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why so many people come into my office with money issues. It's not really the money.
No.
It's just the tool that they use to avoid what they don't want to look at.
Yeah. I say it's really never about the money,
mm-hmm,
but it's the underlying ways that we look at the world.
Yes.
How we think about ourselves.
Yeah.
How we treat other people.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. So sorry, I didn't mean to stop your flow.
That's
there.
Okay. We have one more left, and then we can have more discussion about how these characters can help us or lead us astray.
Mm-hmm.
And the last of the archetypes is the connector. Oh my gosh, the connector. They simply value themselves on relationships. Nothing is more important in this world than eye-to-eye, face-to-face, heart-to-heart, deep, meaningful conversations. They love people. They love to find out what's going on in their world. They just love to connect with other people. And when it comes to money, well, Roberta, they just have the faith and optimism. It'll all work out. Relationships are put before money.
Money, yeah.
Yeah. And what happens with that is that they avoid having money conversations. They avoid money, period.
Mm-hmm.
And so they end up counting on other people to help them with their money, to make decisions around money, because they lack that basic confidence in even looking at a skill set about what does it take for me to manage my money. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. The trap that they can get themselves into is that they trust people who may not have their best interests at heart,
right,
and don't have the financial acumen, if you will, to understand that. And so they can really be taken advantage of in an easy way.
Mm-hmm. So, Mary, when I listen to you talk about all these archetypes, and I'll just use myself as an example, when I took the quiz to find out, you know, really where I leaned, my two I had three. There were a lot of mine were close, but that my top three almost seemed to be in opposition to each other. So, for example, my two strongest were maverick and nurturer.
Right.
And so this is that desire for new ideas, and I'm a risk taker. I mean, this is my fifth business. I didn't know anything about hypnosis before I got into it.
Right.
That's my MO. That's what I thrive on. And yet I'm a huge nurturer, which makes me good at what I do because I truly care about people. But that can be in huge conflict.
It is in huge conflict.
Yeah, because if I'm out there taking risks, I better be able to bring money in the door.
Right. And so you're
not give it away.
Well, that's the whole point is your maverick knows money.
Right.
And knows financial complexity, and they're willing to take risks.
Yeah.
But then the nurturer comes in the side door and says to the maverick, shh, Shh, don't be so greedy. Don't. What, look at these people.
You're in the caring business.
Take care of these people. You're in the caring business. How dare you charge what you're worth? How dare you charge people for all the good work you do? It's your honor and privilege to do this good work. Maybe you should just give it away. Just take care of them and tell them what to do and help them out, and it'll all be okay.
Right.
And the maverick, in the meantime, is rearing his rearing the head up, and hooves are coming up off the ground. Somebody's saying, stop it. This is a business. What's going on with you?
Right.
And so when they are fighting and not playing together, what ends up happening is decisions come across your desk, and as things you need to do for your business, you're going to be in conflict.
Right. And then we look at the other side. When they are playing nice together, they can balance each other.
Right.
And that nurturer can tame that maverick horse, and that maverick can say, hey, no, no, no. You know, we gotta look at this side too, right?
Exactly. So the maverick will come up with big ideas.
Right.
Out of the box thinking, big ideas, like they're not afraid of risks.
Right.
And they know they have the ability to look at the financial outcome of decisions. Mm-hmm. They have that ability.
Yes.
And they just want to go off and do it. Well, the nurturer can come in the front door and simply say, well, this is a good idea, but let's talk about what it takes to put this together.
Yes.
And so then they together can create a plan where both the big ideas are getting out there and the plan to implement it is being followed, and they're happy.
Yes.
Then you can take action and move forward rather than being paralyzed or stuck.
Right.
In decisions.
And I find this so interesting because obviously we're all not one of these. I mean, as I listen to these descriptions, I think, oh, I got some of that in me. I got some of that in me. You know, there are times. Or maybe there were times in my life and I have kind of learned those lessons and grown a little bit. So we have this potential for internal conflict if we just want to look at what causes us problems. And then what if we're married to somebody? Or what if we are in partnership with someone who is the opposite of us? Where does that lead us, Mary?
Can you imagine?
Oh.
So let's take a situation of a client, a couple that I worked with.
Mm-hmm.
He was an accumulator. Safe, secure, tuck it away.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about, because he never saving was important to him because he never wanted, like I said, to be dependent upon other people to take care of him. Self-sustaining was the most important thing. And lo and behold, he was married to a romantic.
Uh-oh.
Can you imagine?
Opposites attract, right?
Oh, my gosh. And it's more common than you think that the opposites really do attract, because what you see attractive in someone is part of what you don't have in yourself.
Right.
So she's out spending money and shopping for the kids and getting everything ready and decorating the house. And it was a huge conflict in the relationship. In fact, you know, money is one of the things that 50% of the it's 50% of the time that draws relationships apart into some sort of closure, into a divorce or a separation.
I believe that.
And so when we worked together, we took the strengths of both of them. He had to do a little giving, mm-hmm. and set up a budget with her, and she had to then say she was willing to give it her best shot to try to follow that plan that they put together. Because while he was, if he would take the position of trying to control her, the more she would spend. So we brought them together and simply said, okay, so you recognize the strengths of each one. How can we together put together a plan for you that's going to work so that the accumulator isn't freaked out and the romantic doesn't feel like she's being deprived?
Right. And I think that's really, really important because, again, I'll go back to our brains always gearing us toward that fear, because it wants to keep us safe.
Right.
When we can choose to look at this, you know, in two ways. Oh, they're the opposite. We're always going to be in conflict. Or how can we use the strength of each of our qualities to make the whole of us much more healthy and productive and successful?
Absolutely. And we use our strengths. It's much easier to look at situations than to try and do something that's not within our wheelhouse.
Exactly. And, you know, unfortunately, because our brains are hardwired for the negative, that's where we go. So
exactly.
I think the real benefit of this conversation is, let's look at it on the positive side and see the strength of these archetypes and how we can use them to really benefit ourselves. So we have to go to commercial break as we head into our last segment. But when we come back, we're going to kind of tie a nice ribbon around all of this.
Yeah.
And we'll be talking a little more with Mary about money. back, everybody. I'm Roberta Fernandez, and you're listening to Minding Your Health. We're talking with Mary Schmidt about fears and attitudes around money, and this is just such a fascinating conversation. So, Mary, let's talk about, I think the best way to wrap this up is to give some examples of how these archetypes have come into play. And during the break, we were talking about a business client of yours.
Yeah.
Let's chat about that.
Yeah, I'd love to, Roberta. My business client was a lawyer, mm-hmm. and it was all about connecting to people. Loved to have these conversations, loved to get people in her office just to interview them, to talk about what's going on. And at the end of the conversation, she thought from the connector viewpoint that if they wanted to work with her, they would tell her that. She was just assuming because the conversation went well that if they wanted to continue it, they would initiate it. So I said to her, what do you think would happen if, as you're closing the conversation, and these are people that you really want to work with, you gave them that invitation? You see, you've set up this beautiful relationship. You know all about them. They're connected to you. You trust them. But you're not letting them know that if they really did want to work with you, how to take the next step. Mm-hmm. She looked at me with this, like I said, with this face and faith and octaves, like these doe eyes. And she goes, oh, I never really thought about that. I don't want to be salesy, but I never thought about inviting them in. And I said, well, I would like for you to try that and see what happens. So she incorporated that into the conversations that she was having with her clients. And guess what happened? It was like pure magic. People would say to her, she would say something simply like, I would really like to work with you, and I would like to invite you to be my client so we can do this work together. And they would just look at her and simply say, all right, yes, I was waiting for you to ask.
Right.
So you see just one simple shift using your strength of connector and then shifting one little thing that you can do, shifting one part of your conversation can make all the difference in the world. So we play to the strengths and then look at where that may be not getting you to meeting your goals and how can we shift it. It's not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but just a small shift. And how you look at things and how you then lead conversations with the people that may be your clients, your partners, your spouses, your family.
Right. And so do you find, Mary, when you work with these archetypes with people that they kind of are who they are, or does it change as they go through life based on their experiences? I mean, is this something that somebody would take an assessment and then 10 years later expect it to come out the same?
In my experience, Roberta, and I'll use myself as an example, when we do the archetype work, we look at the top three, mm-hmm. and then we decide which ones have the strength and which ones have some challenges that we really need to work with. And depending upon how much you've worked with some of the challenges, the ranking of the top three will change, but the top three will not change. You are who you are with money. Mm-hmm. It's wired into you. It's hardwired into your DNA. It's hardwired into your belief system. But the beautiful piece about that is you can change the impact you create once you know what the beliefs are and how they serve you or don't serve you.
Right.
So I've had the top. I've been doing this work now for 6 years, and every year I take the assessment just because I'm curious. And the top three have changed around a little bit depending upon what I'm focusing on and where I really want to grow myself.
Right. And that makes sense to me because I can see when I look at my top three, that exact same thing.
Exactly.
Depending on my life. When I got my divorce, man, I was much, you know, that maverick part of me was greatly quieted because there was so much risk there, so much uncertainty that it took me a while to figure out, okay, what am I willing to risk next and how am I going to go about that? And that nurturer really needed to take care of me.
Exactly.
You know, and say, you know what, you're going to be okay. Everything's going to be fine. You know, now today in my situation, that maverick is right back there on the top, you know.
Looking for new ideas and looking for ways to do things a little bit differently because you're not afraid to take a risk. And the nurture is where?
It's a close second. And the reason is because my business is based on on helping other people. Yeah. But this is what's really cool is over, I'm in my fifth year as a hypnotist, my second year with my big expansion, which was a huge risk
yes.
to take. So, you know, that nurturer was like scared to death at that
right.
point. But the maverick was like, hey, you've done this before. It's no big deal. You know, you can, you've done the numbers. It's going to work. But the cool part is now, 2 years into the business almost, the expansion, now they're really working seamlessly
mm-hmm.
because the nurturer has calmed that maverick to say, hey, it's not about just, you know, we have to be implementing and doing what you set out to do, and that was to help people improve their lives.
Right.
So you need to pay more attention to me. You know, the expansion is there. Yeah, you're keeping an eye on the money and the books and all that. Right. It's keeping the nurturer sustainable. So, yeah, I've seen a huge shift in how that's coming about, but they're working in tandem, not against each other.
Yes, and when they work together in tandem, we call it congruency, where they're together and how they work and how they play, all sorts of possibilities open up.
Yeah.
Because when they're not, when they're fighting each other, when they're in conflict, what happens to us is we get stalled and we don't make a decision.
Right.
We get confused. We feel bad. We think that we're not good enough. We just can't figure out. And more than likely, it's because the situation that you're in, these two, your archetypes are fighting. And so when we bring them together, I use the word in harmony.
Right.
They know how to play together. And when they play together, they'll stay together.
Very interesting. Yeah. So, Mary, I can't believe time is like winding down here. Is there anything else you want to add before we have to end this? I think this has just been really, really helpful for our listeners. I mean, some people, when they think, well, this is a health show, why are we talking about money?
Yeah.
It is about our mental health, isn't it?
Right, because money, as I spoke earlier, is the biggest stressor for many of us. Now, it may not be currently, but I would guess that every single one of us at some point in our lives have had money as a stressor.
Yes.
And when we figure out what the stressors are based on the beliefs and the conflicts that we're in, we can then begin with a clear head to make decisions and set goals that move us in the direction
exactly.
of where we want to go rather than feeling stuck.
Yeah, that it makes so much sense to me how all of this has come together. So, Mary, this has been amazing information for our listeners. Can you tell me how do people get in touch with you if they want to follow up?
Yeah, people can certainly just email me. Is the easiest way. It's mary@maryschmid.com.
Oh, that's pretty easy. Spell your last name.
M-A-R-Y at maryschmid.com. And if listeners would like to take the assessment to determine what their archetypes are and talk about how that impacts the decisions that they make and the life that they live, I would be happy to offer that as a complimentary gift.
Excellent. Excellent. Mary, thank you so much for being on the show. To all our listeners out there, I'm Roberta Fernandez. You can find me at fairhypnosis.com. That's F-A-R-E, hypnosis.com. Or you can give me a call at 952-934-1315. And make sure you join us here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, next week when we'll be having another special guest, and at the moment that is not coming to me who it is. I am so engrossed in this money thing. I'm just thinking, okay, Maverick, settle down here. I have all these ideas coming into my head now for a client I'm seeing. I want to thank you for joining me, and I wish all of you a mindful week.